Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 14 of the Modern Masculinity Project. Thanks for downloading and sharing your time with me. My name is Brad Pankey. I am the host of this podcast. In each episode, I sit down with other men for open, vulnerable, and sometimes challenging conversations on a wide range of topics with the goal of normalizing the idea of men sharing how they feel openly and that sharing emotions is a sign of strength. I am also looking to discover the critical moments in a man's life that we consider turning points, you know, those moments that contribute to most to how we define ourselves as men today. And selfishly, you know, doing this podcast allows me to engage in deeper conversations, which I dig. I also hope that all of us, men, women, non-binary folks, can find something in these conversations that resonate, that touch their soul. And, you know, who knows, maybe we can learn something by simply listening to one another. If you have not done so already, please subscribe and rate the podcast on iTunes. Tell your friends, your significant other, your grandma, your Aunt Karen, and all the people in your life. You can reach me on Twitter. The handle is at mmprojectpod. You can reach me on Instagram at mmprojectpod and via email mmprojectpod@gmail.com. All three of those will be the best way to send me your questions, comments, stories, whatever you got for me. All right, let's just get right into it this week. No messing around. Please enjoy episode number 14 of the Modern Masculinity Project. Not all who wander are lost with myself.
Fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me, I can cause a deadly blow. And still the river flows, only heaven knows where the two winds flow, where the rivers flow.
Another solo episode for y'all. These are really challenging for me, and this one was much more difficult than the first one I did, even though that one was unclear in points, but I thought the idea for it kind of came out a little easier for me when I was kind of writing down some notes and organizing things. But this one I struggled a bit. I struggled to connect themes and ideas and just clearly communicate what I wanted to say, stay on topic, and more ideas just kept coming to me as I experienced a little bit more over time of what I wanted to talk about. You know, I wrote this over kind of several months, so I just, the issue kind of kept coming up and my view of it kept evolving over these months. But, so it's been a real challenge, I guess. But, you know, the reason I like doing these solo episodes is because of the struggles that I experience thinking about complex matters of the heart, you know, masculinity and my own personal growth. They're confusing and they take some time to sort out. And for me, these solo episodes are a deep exploration in matters of the heart, which is something I think men need to do more of. You know, boys and men in this culture are not encouraged to explore issues of the heart, such as love, sympathy, or generosity. You know, I was raised differently by my dad, who always encouraged me to strengthen my heart through certain practices, such as running, meditation, traveling, and journaling. You know, he always told me to try to find ways to build practice into everything that I do. But being raised by a man who encouraged me to anchor myself in my heart didn't make me immune to the cultural norms, however. Instead, it made me feel like I was often doing something wrong, even though I, you know, admired my father. But at times, I felt like less of a man. some of this practice has manifested in a way that has made me kind of wander both mentally and physically throughout the world. And I've struggled to feel comfortable in that wandering because, you know, because like I mentioned, men are pressured to be leaders. You know, that stereotype of men not asking for directions. We men should always know where we're going and have a plan, right? That's what men do. Yeah, sure. Sure. And so it's my wandering and how that has shaped me as a man that is the subject of today's solo episode. You know, I just, this brain of mine, it has a tendency to wander in thought, skipping from one idea to another and diving deep into certain subjects. All this has taken me on a few amazing, somewhat impulsive adventures, but I suppose that's how I've always been. I've always been a thinker, bordering on an overthinker, admittedly, but I've always let my mind wander and lead me on different adventures. You know, this is something my dad and I used to talk about a lot. I've talked about him a lot on this podcast with guests, mentioning that I wouldn't mind mirroring many of his traits. One of those traits that I wouldn't mind mirroring was his ability to not think, you know, but like in a controlled way. He was quite good at not thinking in moments where it didn't serve him well. My thinking, my wandering brain used to drive my dad crazy. I ran cross country in high school, but due to my brain, I never really registered times as fast as I could have. I don't think I really ever, you know, accessed the physical potential that I had. I was a serious head case thinking about going out too fast or not going out fast enough or whatever, you know, which looking back is silly. There's no need to think too much before a 5K race. It's only 3 miles. Just go out there and run hard. But the training is done, you know, in that case. And so all the point I needed to do was just run and push myself. But thinking about all of the what ifs in that moment is counterproductive. And, you know, so my dad was a coach for around 20 years and saw this in me. And I can't recall how many times his advice to me was just fucking run. He'd tell me one time, just go out and run the first mile as fast as you can. Who cares? Had I listened to him, I would have undoubtedly run much faster. Oh, well. But, you know, it's just an example of my wandering mind kind of getting in the way. But this brain of mine, I tell you, it's constantly working, looking, thinking, considering, listening, churning, and wandering. It gives no shits of what time of day it is either. 2 a.m.? Sure. Here's a thought or an idea for work. Here you go. Think about this for the next couple hours and not sleep. And even the simplest comments can get me thinking, you know, like really thinking. So much so that I feel compelled to do a podcast where I talk to myself for an hour, however long this takes. In that sense, it's both a curse and a blessing. And that is what I am here to talk about, wandering through the world, this you know, cursed blessing that I have of wandering. A few conversations I had recently got me thinking and turned me inward. One of those conversations, a regular contributor to the show, mentioned how masculinity hasn't really evolved as femininity has over time. That simple comment got me thinking, how has my masculinity evolved over time? Has it? Have I just simply come to better define how it applies to me? If it has evolved, what did I do to spark that evolution? And now you can see where my overactive brain, my thinking brain just gets at work, right? It just keeps churning. And a simple comment led to numerous questions that I wanted to explore and take a look at. The next comment came from a close friend, more like a brother. Let's call him my brother. We were chatting back and forth, and I mentioned that I had been watching Westworld Season 2. Joked that if I was wondering if I'm really human after watching that, you know. If you've seen that show, you know what I'm saying. At any rate, he tickled my curious brain with his response, where he said, I've completely given up trying to find answers. I'm fine with not knowing anything, just worried about my golf game. And I don't bring this up with the intention to point this out as a negative. I don't think it is. It's cool. I love it. I wish I had more of it. It's just simply his way of living. I'm sure he has his own methods of growing and navigating through life, but the comment left me thinking, much like the one from the listener did. It left me churning again. Some questions that came up is, am I searching for something? Am I treating life and myself like a puzzle that can be solved? Are my many wanderings around the world a result of me trying to solve something, to find a direction? Or is something else happening? You know, what is this? What is my physical wandering? And so here I am now, synthesizing these thoughts. My overthinking brain that decided to process two comments. One on evolving masculinity and one on whether or not I'm something that can be solved, or maybe that life is a puzzle that can be solved. You know, at first, you know, these both came at once, and I didn't think these two were related. But as I, you know, wandered deeper down the rabbit holes, I started to find out that they were highly connected. And the common thread I discovered is that my tendency to wander, both mentally and physically, has taught me powerful lessons in life and shaped my view on what it means to be a man. This is a bit tricky for me to explain because wandering can often feel and look like I am lost. You know, it can also feel like and look like I'm trying to solve something or perfect life, you know. But as I thought about it, kind of why my mind wanders and why I allow myself to be led on wandering adventures, I realize it's just because I'm curious. You know, and I feel like I've always been extremely curious, which has been, again, another blessing and a curse in a way. Seems like we are often taught to find our passion and do that for work, right? Find your passion and you'll never work a day in your life. But in doing so, we will never have to work another day. So that just never resonated with me. This assumes that we should be passionate about one thing above all other interests, right? That there is a wrong choice and a right choice. Seems like that just puts a lot of pressure on people. And I know it kind of did me. It never felt right because I wanted to wander and be curious and explore different parts of life instead of finding just one thing. I don't know how many college majors I went through until I kind of sat down and wrote some down and started to think about them. You know, I wanted to be a chiropractor for a while, and I started heading down that path. I wanted to teach PE for a while because it sounded easy, which it is not, I can tell you that. So I started headed down that path. I wanted to be a lawyer when I was young. I never went to school for it, but my mind was just curious about it. For a while, I wanted to be an architect. Took high school classes in architecture and stuff and design and enjoyed it, but I never pursued it. There's a time when I was applying to and exploring sports psychology and you know, for those schools, and never got there, but it just always sounded fascinating. For the longest time, being a dietitian sounded like it would have been a lot of fun. And I actually started doing that, but then bailed on it. You know, finally one day I settled on exercise science, and that was simply because I had no fucking clue what I wanted to do. That world always interested me, so it seemed to come easy. And to be honest, it just kept the path open to many of the professions I just mentioned. You know, it was the most flexible. It would allow me to be curious later. But I had no real plan. You know, in the end, I ended up getting a master's in business administration and sports marketing, which really has nothing to do with science. You know, I wandered out of science world simply to challenge my brain in a different way. Really didn't have a plan for that after school, admittedly. But it was an experience, and Of course, I had some jobs in mind, but nothing concrete. You know, it's not maybe the most economically efficient way to wander and learn things, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. The people I met, just, you know, in the actual material, some of the things I learned have been highly valuable now in the job that I have now. And, you know, looking at the jobs I've had, though, done a lot of exploration in that area, too, as a professional. I did dock work on a boat one summer. Same guy that was spurred me to think about all this wandering. Our job was to cut out all this fiberglass and old foam from the fish tanks in the boat, you know, where the boat holds all the fish that they catch. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, but I can tell you without question, this was the most disgusting job I've ever had. And I've worked at Applebee's, folks, okay? But this job takes the cake. I guess what would happen was the tanks would freeze, and the ice needed to be chipped away, okay? So when they chipped away the ice, they would often poke holes in the fiberglass, allowing that kind of fishy water to seep into the foam and pool at the bottom of the tank. Now, this fish soup turned the foam black and created the most horrific smell you could ever imagine. So we had to clean that up. You know, we'd get in there, we'd cut out the fiberglass, which would make your skin itch, and you'd have to wear masks and everything, and it would reveal the foam, and then we'd have to chip every single piece of foam away from the metal, from the steel, and get it clean. And some of it was just black sludge. We definitely had to throw our clothes away after that. It was horrid. You know, it's just, we would just laugh on our way home because it stank so bad in the car. But, you know, I've also had other jobs, doing yard work during the summer. As I mentioned, I worked at Applebee's, I've worked at Starbucks. So deep into these corporate worlds. Randomly, I worked for this concrete testing company. I had no idea what I was doing there. That lasted like a month. Taught elementary school PE. I taught English in South Korea. Worked in sports retail. Now I find myself working in marketing for a shoe company, doing events, meeting amazing people, and having more just profound experiences in some cases. But I don't know if any of these are my passion. You know, specifically one thing that I can point to. As you know, job role wise. Instead, my passion is to use work to explore different parts of myself, to expand myself in different areas. I have had some pretty rad experiences trying out new things, but I've never felt the need to find one thing to do forever. You know, work has never been a puzzle piece that I needed to fit into anything. In each of these jobs, I guess the most profound thing that I keep finding is just connecting with other people and just learning from other people. But point is, for me, life is not a puzzle to be solved. It's not something to complete. You know, life is something to experience. It's something to engage with. You know, we experience pain, love, which some might argue is the same thing, but contentment, fear, joy, boredom, exhilaration, and so on. We can experience spiritual connections with other people over long periods of time or in a passing moment. All these things, however, are experienced in living, and these are the memorable moments that fill out our lives, that make it so worth living. None of these things solve anything, not for me at least. In fact, experiencing one or more may well create more complications, right? You kind of, you know, add layers and layers to your life, and you know, you just start discovering new desires and new wants and new challenges for yourself. And so my wandering, my thinking, and random adventures are not about perfecting myself. That'll never happen, and thinking about it now, that kind of sounds boring. Wouldn't be able to continue to have these kind of profound moments if I was suddenly perfect. The hell would I do with my day to day if everything was perfect? Seems like I wouldn't be curious and about anything anymore. But I don't know. I fully acknowledge that I'm not the good person that I want to be yet. I mean, I think I'm a good person, but I'm not there yet. For me, becoming that person is going to take a very specific type of work, which is wandering and experiencing as much of what life has to offer as possible. I have no plans on arriving anywhere, and I know I won't discover the secret to life in a place or a single experience. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, "The good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent on arriving." That's from the Tao Te Ching. So when I start to kind of feel like I've arrived anywhere, I start to feel super skeptical. I really start to question myself that what am I doing? Am I continuing to push my comfort zone? Am I leaning into fear like I should be to, you know, that's going to lead me to discovering something new and exciting about myself or about life or about learning something new? And it's in those moments I start to feel lazy and a bit uneasy. And this is generally when I've looked to make changes and embark on new adventures. You know, if I'm looking for anything, or if I had to come up with what my goal from life is, would be that I am looking to expand. I'm not sure that perfect is the right word, but maybe. But I'm looking to expand my love and compassion so that I can better see the sacredness and unbearable beauty of life and everyone in it. Should mention that this is the only thing in which I allow myself to seek perfection. I don't know, perfection, I don't see it in relationships, I don't see it in myself, but I want to look to perfect my love and compassion. You know, and that's not to put pressure on myself, but, you know, love is the only thing there for me. So, and I guess the reason being is that I won't ever become lost filling myself with more love. You know, it won't be ever a problem. I won't do harm by increasing my capacity to receive and share love. So I don't mind wandering around in that area. But when I step back and think about my wandering, I'm realizing that it's related to how I see myself as a man and how my relationship with masculinity has evolved. My wandering has served as almost a rite of passage. To me, it seems like a rite of passage is somewhat missing for young men in this culture. It's pretty easy to live in the U.S. as a young man, or just as people, really. You know, but for men, we're told to be strong, grow up, show no emotion, soldier on, be tough so early on in our lives that we aren't really encouraged to adventure out into the world to learn more about ourselves as men, to get out there and fail, to try new things, and to explore who we are as people, you know, to find really what makes our heart sing. And because of that, perhaps young men are missing the softer, more empathetic side of life that I have discovered through my varied experiences and through the way my dad raised me, you know. I've had a lot of different experiences traveling and working, as I mentioned, but my travels have offered me some pretty incredible lessons. You know, I just want to go through a few of those, and because it was so fun to look back at these and just remember these times. Sound like I'm 60 years old, I'm 31, but I've done so many different things that I've had to pack a lot in. But, you know, and back in about, I think it was 2009, I graduated with my undergraduate degree, and I moved to Oakland, California. I was single. My dad was single. We just got an apartment together. Why? I have no idea. We just wanted to. There was no reason. It sounded like fun. Okay. But, you know, when I got to Oakland, I'm moving from Oregon, and I was born and raised in Oregon. Very white Oregon, not much diversity, especially on the Oregon coast, and even where I lived in other places. So, you know, you get to super diverse, culturally rich Oakland, California, and it was going to take some learning. And but what I did learn, when I saw happen to myself, is that I opened up to the suffering of others, to the value and beauty of diversity. You know, you just can step back and observe how people interact with one another and how people are treated, and it can just be a moving experience in some cases, and you see people living a life that's very much different than yours, yet they're just thriving and so happy, and you start to realize that there's more than one way to do this thing. And they help, you know, in many cases I was shown how to be happier. You know, I was getting these conversations with people. I worked at this this vegan restaurant. I forgot that one. Worked in this vegan restaurant called Cafe Gratitude. And some of the conversations I would get in at this cafe were just amazing. A little bit about this cafe first is that if you're not familiar with Cafe Gratitude, it got a rep for being kind of cultish, I guess. And every day we would start our shift with like this clearing or cleansing, or I can't remember what we called it, but you would pretty much sit down with your manager and you would like look each other in the eyes and they would ask you these certain questions. Brad, what are you grateful for today? And they would just sit there and look at you. And you'd have to come up with an answer. And, you know, you go through these series of questions and, you know, you just answer eventually. You're like, well, I had a pretty good breakfast and I don't know, got here on time and it's a pretty good day. And they'd look at you and they'd just go, that's great. You know, just stuff like that. But so we did attract a certain clientele, but at these restaurants, we also, it was pretty cool. Actually, I kind of make fun of it, but the restaurant would serve this thing called a gratitude bowl, which meant it was just kale, some tahini sauce, some black beans and rice or something. And people could come in and pay whatever they wanted for it. You only have a quarter, you pay a quarter. You wanted to pay $20, you could pay $20 and it helps pay for other people. So I would get that, that would attract a very wide range of kind of people, right? You would get the poor people who literally might be wandering in from the street homeless because they found a quarter on their way in to eat samples inside Whole Foods. This place was located inside of a Whole Foods. So, you know, they find a quarter and oh my God, they know that they can go get a, like this big plate of food at Cafe Gratitude. So I would get to talk to those people. I would get to talk to people who would pay, you know, $20 for it just because they wanted to be generous. And those were amazing conversations. I'd talk to people from Africa, from South America, from all over the world. And you just get into these amazing conversations with people and, it changed my view of diversity. It opened up my heart to it. Not that I wasn't open to it before or had any fear of things that were different, but it just made it so much more beautiful to me, you know? So, that was a pretty powerful lesson that I learned in Oakland. And, you know, later this would kind of be reinforced a bit, because in about 2012, I moved to South Korea on a whim, you know, which kind of sounds crazy, but that's how I do it. I wander. So moved to South Korea to be an English teacher. And what I kind of learned there, I started to open up to receiving gratitude and love from others. And I also expanded my capacity to receive and share love, right? My students would, I worked at this all boys middle school, which middle school boys, I think we've talked about them on here before. Holy hell. But my students would bow to me in the hallway. And when I entered class, you know, and that for a while that made me really uncomfortable, but I didn't understand the culture and didn't really realize what they were doing. But, you know, Koreans hold teachers in high regard, you know, so this was a sign of respect. And, you know, just because I was uncomfortable doesn't mean I should have, you know, shunned it. So I had to learn to receive this with gratitude, even though I felt undeserving. Some of it was imposter syndrome, right? And I don't know about me. I don't deserve that. But I had to learn to love in the face of extreme personal differences. And it really did make me uncomfortable. But eventually I just smile and nod and thank them. And not that I was offended by it. So, but there were other moments that I struggled in Korea as well. You know, one of my co-teachers ended up harassing me and another American teacher. I got angry for some reason that we had other co-teachers and wanted to spend time with them and learn from them. In one situation, she accused me of wanting to have an affair with one of them, which was really odd, just because I wanted to sit at her desk with her one time. It got real weird, but the point is, telling that part is my only way to survive that situation was to ground myself in love. You know, it was hard enough to get adjusted to living in South Korea without dealing with crazy work dynamics, but by grounding myself in love, I was able just to smile and kind of move through it. And then eventually she just kind of came around too. I had to be super patient, but she got there. So, you know, one of the other wanderings I had was I took myself to Paris. Yes, that Paris, France, for another job. And it's here that I really started to grow my confidence in myself. And this wasn't too long ago. This was 2015, started 2016, really started to grow the confidence in myself and started to learn what my value was professionally, you know, to know your worth type of deal. Was working for an early stage startup company and wanted it up to be less than nurturing environment, let's put it that way. I felt like I was there just to simply work rather than contribute to the direction of the company. And that was difficult, right? I'm just fresh out of my master's degree, and I felt like I had something to offer, and I was excited and motivated and ready to go, and I wanted to grow professionally, but a lot of the times my ideas and, you know, my challenges to their ideas were met pretty coldly. But as I could kind of see them, you know, struggling through things a bit, and eventually we would try out something I suggested, not that I'm right all the time, but that it was successful, then it's like, I know I have got something to offer here. You know, I can see some success, but it was still very hard to be bottled up. But I kind of started to learn how to value myself professionally and how to move forward. And, you know, this was a big confidence building, time for me. So I'm grateful for that time, as difficult as it was. But I think it helped me in my next step, which same company, and we eventually moved to London to open up an office in the UK. So same company, but much different environment, because it was just three people, and, you know, I was in an English speaking country and culturally a little more similar to the US, and it was just way different. But here, I really, this part of my wandering really taught me the importance of community, taking care of your neighbor, and how much I value feeling free to be whatever I want to be. You know, when I moved to When I moved to London, it was a really weird transition for me because I had an apartment, but I couldn't move in yet. I had to wait like a week. So there was like this really uneasy, like I arrived there with bags and really kind of nowhere to go. But one of the guys that we had met, I'd met the guy one time, James Poole and Cloudy. I met them one time. That was at the London Marathon Expo, just a little bit shortly before that. And he's like, yeah, man, you can just stay with me. And, you know, people say that and, you know, it's, you know, some people just say it to be nice, but he actually meant it. And when I hit him up, I'm like, look, here's my situation. Were you, you know, are you serious? Can I stay with you guys? And he said, yes. And so when I was there, he took me in for a week. He'd only met me once. I stayed in their bedroom and they pretty much invited me into their home and made me a part of the family, which I can't say how grateful I am for that. And just witnessing them and their running group and how close they all were, it just really taught me the importance of community and taking care of people. You know, taking care of your neighbor. And just in general in the UK, you know, universal health care and the mindset that I would interact with people at the grocery store. They're like, oh, you're American, right? I'm like, yeah, American. And I usually try to stay pretty quiet. I wasn't a loud American type, but they were pretty bold. They would just be like, well, your healthcare system, like, if you don't have health insurance, what do you do? And I would explain to them the process and they're like, wait, so sometimes you just don't get healthcare? I'm like, well, yeah, that's, you know, sometimes you can't afford it. And they just thought that was crazy because they just did not understand the concept of not taking care of your neighbor. And they were just baffled. But, I think it really gave me a sense that they were all a little bit closer than we are here in the States. And that sense of community there is just a lot different than it is here. And it was important. It welcomed me, an American, in. And they were happy to have me. But at the same time, there's a very different mindset around nationalism there that's different here. And they're very inviting and everything. But anything, you know, I have long hair and tattoos and whatever, and people there do there too. But I also value feeling free to be whatever I want to be and that it's not pointed out. You know, the differences aren't pointed out. And that's one thing where America, I think, at times can really thrive. That's where it really stands out is maybe that's just an Oregon, Portland thing, but we're really just free to be whatever the hell we want to be. And people are like, hey, that's rad, you know, and go about their day. So point is, you know, this part of my wandering really brought me, really refocused my, you know, refocused my, the value that I put on community and taking care of my neighbor and just allowing people to be whatever they want to be with no judgment or comment. And so, you know, I have all these experiences and I've learned a lot and I continue to learn even from my experience now after London is Portland. Become a lot more gentler with myself in Portland and it's taken some time. But, you know, when I'm kind of observing all these at once, it's like, what has changed? What was the thing that changed in me? It's made me become kind of what I like to call the observer, right? It's made me much quieter, a much more introspective person. And one of my strategies for not seeming like a loud American that didn't give two shits about other cultures was to simply stay quiet and smile when out and about. You know, I spoke softly, listened intently, and simply tried to be present with whomever I was speaking with. You know, and I'm often caught in silence, right? Whether it be in groups or whatever, I'm just kind of a quiet person. But, you know, it's in silence when I'm observing others. And in silence, I'm observing myself. And I think, you know, sometimes we just need more of that. And I don't like to speak unless I have something to say that can add to the situation. So if I don't, I stay quiet. And this can seem off-putting to people, but until I have something to add, I don't feel the need to add my voice to a conversation. And so the observer, you know, this observer sitting with silence, you know, I find that I am enjoying each moment more than ever before. However, you know, if you just sit in silence with a moment, just sit there, look around and realize how good the moment is, just because you're simply sitting there breathing, you know, as my mind is softened, its need to think, you know, as my need to think has been dampened, as my mouth is quieted, and I can see people living with pure joy and happiness doing so in a much different way than I'm doing it. You know, when my mind is thinking and my mouth is loud, I don't really notice that as much. So becoming the observer has allowed me to see that there is no right way to live. There is nothing to fear in what is different from myself. Thinking about all this made me understand how my view of what it means to be a man has changed. The result of all my wanderings, going through my own personal rite of passage, is an evolution of my own masculinity. For me, that means I've become much more present and less resistant to what is. Mainly, I don't feel the need to apply force into anything in life, be it in relationships, at work, or anywhere really. I don't need to have a voice. I don't need to share an opinion. I don't need to insert my thoughts into everything, which I know sounds a bit hypocritical because I'm doing this right now. But if a group of people are talking, for example, I don't need to add anything. The great part about this is that people can listen or not to what I'm saying. And I don't feel bad, but the benefit of opening up, like on this podcast, which you can listen to or not, is of opening up and reflecting and crystallizing these thoughts in for me. And just simply sharing something like this is just a bonus if it helps someone in some way. But so the wandering and becoming the observer, right? We're talking about wandering with no direction and being curious, you know, and where has that led me? I can't really summarize it, but I can say that this wandering has taught me a lot. And it's the place that it's put me in now is a place where I know who I am now more than ever before. I love who I am now more than ever before. I love those close to me now more than ever before. I am open to love now more than ever before. And that's love in every sense of the word. I want to simply be quiet and listen now more than ever before and just soak in the joy of others and see how they're doing it. Maybe I'll learn something. I'm learning what it means to hold a space for a partner and for the other people in my life, which I'm not even sure I understood what that meant before. But as I continue walking through these unknown doors and making plenty of mistakes in life, which I will certainly do more of soon, probably today, I will continue learning something new about myself, about others, and about life. Little by little, in all of my wanderings, I am discovering who I really am, which is the greatest gift I can give myself. So, as I kind of arrive near the end of this ramble, it's, you know, why do I share this? It's to say that it's okay to wander, to explore your thoughts and fears, and to do it with no fixed destination or goal in mind. It's okay to simply exist. You know, if you're one of these people who are out there thinking, I don't have a direction, it's okay. Don't feel like you're lost. If you're out there just wandering without a quote unquote direction, you're good. You know, that assumes that you should be going somewhere, trying to get to one place or working to solve life as though it's a puzzle, right? We kind of mentioned that. Wherever you are now is not your final destination anyways. You can think you have your direction set, and then life will flip you upside down, turn you on your ass, and dunk your head in the toilet. And then your direction is completely gone. You know, that's happened to me already about 5 times. So just know that wherever you are now is not your final destination. This certainly isn't my final resting place. This isn't where I'm going to stop. And I think when people suggest that you should just, you know, find a direction, they're just kind of placing that, their view on the world on you. They're putting pressure on you. You know, a lot of times stuff like that's their own insecurity, which, you know, it's cool. Just let them be. But I guess just to say, just keep walking your own path. Do no harm to others. Smile at the swirling chaos. Lighten up and enjoy the time you have to wander on this earth. All right. That's all I have for you today, folks. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you, you know, letting me ramble on and listening to one of these solo meanderings. As always, I welcome your feedback and thoughts. Would love to hear from y'all. But all right, y'all. Until next time, be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts, and had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough. To see when